At the beginning of the 70s, Brisbane rock band Railroad Gin were at a crossroads. Their lead singer, Jeff Fitzgibbon, had decided to leave the group just as they were beginning to make it, and there were gig offers coming in, but it seemed that there may not be a band shortly to take them up.
Railroad Gin had been performing regularly at the famous Red Orb in the Valley, and a colleague of Fitzgibbon's from the advertising industry had been sitting in with the band playing percussion and occasionally some backing vocals. They decided to call around town and hitting nothing but dead ends, the band got together and decided they had no other option than to give Carol Lloyd a go.
And they came to me and said, "We're in a bad place here. No one wants to know about us. We're going to have to disband. It's going to happen anyway. So, hell, you might as well have a crack at it." So, with a huge vote of confidence, I was asked to sing lead.
She was excited and nervous at the prospect of fronting the band, so she got on the phone to a close mate, Warren Wildsmith, who was fronting popular local acts like Rufus and Capital Showband.
So I phoned Wazza and said, "Wazza, you won't believe it. The Gin have asked me to sing lead with them." And there was this long pause, and I could hear this little emerging chuckle at the other end, and finally said, "Oh, Lloydie, what? What, you sing lead in a rock band?" He said, "Girls don't sing in rock bands. It's never going to happen, mate. It's never going to happen. You haven't got the bits." So I thought, okay, what's he getting at here? And I could see the mental picture of Wazza doing his famous on-stage pelvic thrust, and I thought, okay, those bits. Well, I said, "Wazza, I don't know. Maybe I haven't got the bits, but I'm prepared to give it a shot. So give me a shot at it and just watch me, mate."
This is Recollections. I'm Geordie Kilby.
And I'm David Kilby.
And what followed is the amazing story of a rock band who blazed many, many trails in the 5 years they were together. We've been speaking to Carol Lloyd about the hits.
You never know when you're going to fluke a combination of sounds and words and meanings and influences that will become more or less timeless.
And the touring.
In any given year, we were driving 5 times around the world. We couldn't afford to fly, so we were driving everywhere, and that was hard yakka.
And the hair.
Even though my hair was insured with Lloyd's of London for $100,000, I immediately went to the hairdressers and had it all cut off.
In the late 60s, great vocalists like Grace Slick of the Jefferson Airplane and, of course, Janis Joplin gave some shining examples of how a woman might front a successful rock and roll band. Now, there weren't so many Australian groups taking their lead, though, and certainly not in Brisbane.
At this point in time, this is 1970, right? This is 2 years before, you know, at least two years, if not 4 years before, you know, Chrissy Amphlett and people were starting to come on the scene. By then, we had gone on to sign a deal with Phonogram on a Polydor label, which became Polygram, as you know. It was on their Prestige European label. We'd recorded the first multi-track album in the first multi-track studio in Brisbane. It went to number one. The single went to number one. The album went to number one in 6 weeks. We were going through the roof. I couldn't walk down the street. It was like full on by the time all that other stuff started happening. And it progressed from there. So it was a pretty vibrant time, and it was a sort of a groundbreaking time and a challenging time for me because the guys put up a huge testosterone wall, and that was it. I was not going to invade their territory, and they were going to make sure it wasn't going to happen. So they were very obstructive. As much as I love them now, they really gave me a very hard time.
Railroad Gin are in many ways a textbook band for any young up-and-comers. They combined great music, smart marketing on a budget, and a commitment to touring.
We spent our first 4 years touring regional Queensland, the major cities, and also down the east coast of Australia and over to Adelaide. We made sure that we started with a mix, in a preliminary mix of, say, two-thirds covers and one-third originals, and we gradually changed that balance. So we ended up teaching everybody our songs, and we're out there about every 6 weeks. We'd be in the same pub venues or uni venues, refect venues. And so by the time we released that Matter of Time album and single in June 1974, everybody knew the songs and they were hanging out for them because we were promoting the fact that we'd recorded the thing and we were going to be releasing it soon.
Matter of Time is a classic Australian rock album with elements of bands like Santana and Blood, Sweat and Tears.
It still stands up, although we're musically very green, and I'll tell you what, that album is as rough as heck when you think about it and listen to it. We were very inexperienced, and our main skill, as I saw it, was as entertainers, because we'd come along at a time when bands were kind of blues bands and they were kind of content to sort of stare at their shoes and occasionally flick a glance and a little smirk to each other when they played something clever. And they didn't give much of a rat's about the audience, where we in tune were very much interested in entertaining the audience and involving them and communicating with them. So that's where we gained popularity, not so much for our musicality, but for our ability to deliver an audience a performance that they enjoyed.
As we mentioned earlier, they were pretty clever at marketing themselves. Perhaps no surprise given Carol's advertising background.
For instance, before we launched the Matter of Time album, we had some little desk pieces made which we had delivered to the program directors of radio stations. And that contained a little miniature bottle of Vickers gin, and it had an orange Perspex dome over it on a timber base. And it had the words Railroad Gin vertically up the face of the Perspex. So you had this sort of orange gin thing. And we talked to our friends who were in the psych department at UQ, who said, yeah, we should be linking the colour of the thing to Carol's hair because that's one of her trademarks along with her big nose. So this sort of desk piece was meant to... And I have a nose story for you too. that's how that came about. And look, we did those sorts of things. So we raised awareness before we went out with the track. We ran a media event. We ran the clip on a big screen at the newest hotel in town, invited the media along and released it. And as I said, within 3 weeks, that single went to number one across Queensland and in various centres around Australia. And the album, Matter of Time album, which came out a few months later, went to number one in 6 weeks. So it was a huge series of firsts for Queensland rock.
Now, another example of their marketing smarts came just after the album's release.
We invited a whole bunch of our family and friends to La Boite Theatre in Brisbane. We hired it out for a Saturday afternoon, bought in a film crew, gave everybody a bunch of cheap and nasty swamp water and gave them streamers. And we had a huge party because it's a theatre in the round. We'd set up in the middle of the stage with the audience stacked around us, gave them streamers, gave them something to drink, and for 4 hours, locked the doors, and for 4 hours played A Matter of Time, which was being filmed, of course, to be cut into the first real video clip or film clip. This is around June 74. We took that film and we ran it on drive-ins at prime sites and in prime programs on Friday and Saturday nights. And in 74, that's what you did on Saturday night. If you weren't at a gig, you were at a drive-in. So we selected some programs, ran it up on this huge screen, and as a result, everyone thought we were an American band. I don't know where it came from. They had no idea we were Australian, let alone from Queensland. So when we did our first gig, our first big gig as a double bill with Susie Quattro at Festival Hall in about July, August of 74, the entire audience thought we were an international act.
Railroad Gin from their Matter of Time LP from 1974. This is Recollections with David and Geordie Kilby, and while Matter of Time was the band's first LP, they had released some tracks before then. A 1973 EP had been sold as a fundraiser after a rock mass that they were involved with.
We were approached by a couple of mates who were attached to St John's Anglican Cathedral, a couple of boys that were involved there, and there was a thing going on in America, I think, which was the Rock Mass, which they saw as a vehicle to bring young people into the church community to at least experience something of what it's like to be a part of a congregation and maybe take away a few key messages. I think that was the plan. So they came to us and we had, I think, two songs on number one, number three song at the time, and we were ripping along. You know, I literally couldn't walk down the street, and, you know, we used to get pulled off stage, and it was like chaos. So we were very, very popular, and they asked us to perform a rock mass. So we'd recorded with the youth orchestra when we did Matter of Time orchestral version on the album. So we talked to them, and they kindly agreed to join us. So we did this thing at St John's Anglican Cathedral, and the Anglican Archbishop at the time was a terrific bloke and very innovative and very approachable, and sort of made us feel comfortable about coming into the cathedral and making a lot of noise and setting stuff up. And in those days, it was a hallowed ground thing. You wouldn't think about, you know, speaking beyond a whisper in a cathedral. And he wanted us to do a full-scale rock show. So it took us a while to get used to the idea as we were setting up and sound checking, and we were kind of creeping around, and occasionally someone would drop something and swear, and then we'd expect the ceiling to fall down on us. So we were very anxious about it. But look, we ended up totally packing out the cathedral. We had, as I say, the youth orchestra, Queensland Youth Orchestra. We had the choir. We wrote particular pieces to fit in with the mass. One I recall was on the program that we did was Brian Gadd's Show Me the Way, Find the Way. Mm-hmm. And that was a beautiful song, and it sounded stunning in that environment. And we did some Melanie songs, Lay Down. We did one or two others, like The Rose, and other sort of anthemic things that kind of suited the environment of a rock mass. I think they estimated there was, you know, I think about 3,000 or 4,000 people had turned up for that particular event. So it was quite memorable.
Yeah, love is you.
And that's Railroad Gin with Power to the Lord from their 1973 Christmas Bowl Souvenir EP. Carol Lloyd parted ways with the band in the mid-70s. Railroad Gin went on to record one more LP, Journey's End, in 1976, this time with Judy Ford on vocals. Carol's career took a slightly different direction, one that offered mixed results. She made one really great album as the Carol Lloyd Band, an album that included musicians on it like Mark Moffat, who we featured on the program a little while back. The album did really well overseas, but she had some management problems that pretty much spelled the end of Carol's career and changed two of her most talked about features.
After Railroad Gin, I was lured by my management to leave Phonogram and go with a combination of me and a session band that had been operating out of a studio in Brisbane. This package was to be called the Carol Lloyd Band, and it would be signed to EMI International. So I was lured into that, and we did very well. In fact, we did far better internationally than Railroad Gin ever did. In fact, the Gin very rarely were recognised outside of Australia, whereas Carol Lloyd Band was released and published in, I think it was 27 countries, and we charted number one or top five around, you know, Germany, Holland, France, Indonesia, Japan, all sorts of places that to this day a lot of Australians don't even know about. And then stage three was, not content with that, my manager lured me again into a solo deal for America, and we were negotiating with Casablanca and Virgin, who were both new in New York at the time. Casablanca was established and was a hot label, but Virgin was just starting out in New York, and both Casablanca and Virgin were interested in me in a global sense. And What we had to do was to produce a series of clips, some of which we shot at the Refec at UQ. Then the producer, who was Colin Peterson, ex-drummer of the Bee Gees, he felt that the American market already had Barbara Streisand and a substantial snoz, and there was no room for her snoz and mine in America. So the deal was, and it was part of my contract, I saw in small print later, that I had to have a nose job, otherwise the deal was off, before we filmed the clip to go with the single that I'd recorded for them. So in the bad old days of, you know, the mid to late 70s, like 76, people could get away with that. They could force you to change your appearance as part of a contract, or they would sue you. So I had a nose job, and I was fairly resentful because, you know, if you're the kid that had the bad nose in school, you'd copped all the nose gags and you'd had the hard times. So it becomes a bit of a badge of honour that you've survived that long with it, and you sort of became quite accustomed to it and quite fond of it. So, yes, a nose job pursued, and as it turned out, Colin's negotiation skills were not quite as good as his drumming skills with the Bee Gees, and I got a phone call very late one night to say, oh, sorry, man, the deal's not going ahead, where all he had to do was get it signed off. And unfortunately, that wasn't to be. So I'd already had one of my iconic features changed thanks to the contract. So I decided after that, even though my hair was insured with Lloyd's of London for $100,000, I immediately went to the hairdressers and had it all cut off. So that's it. I've had it with the music industry. I've worked my guts out for so many years. I get to this point on the brink of the global thing before the days of the World Wide Web and global record companies. We got to this point only to have somebody fall over on my career. So I walked away. Had my hair cut off and walked away.
Now, before we finish up the program, we really need to play for you Matter of Time. It's an absolute classic. The song was written by keyboard player Laurie Stone, and Carol contributed some of the lyrics.
We used to rehearse at this stage, very early days, at an old timber scout hall, which was in fact one of those old fibro wartime accommodation sheds that they used to build around army bases and around wherever American troops were stationed during the war. And a series of these old sheds would exist for quite a while in bushland on the outskirts, southern outskirts of Brisbane. So out at Mount Gravatt, this one had become a scout hall, and it was pretty rough and pretty hot. It had a tin roof, fibro walls and an old timber floor, but it was far enough in the bush for us to make enough noise and not disturb people. And I recall one Saturday afternoon we were rehearsing, and Laurie sort of had this idea of a song hanging around his head, and he said he'd written the first verse and he'd got stuck and didn't know where to go from there. And he said, oh, Lloydie, you know, you're an advertising person. You write commercials. Maybe you can write some lyrics. I thought, well, hell, I'll have a crack at that. Why not? Again, another challenge. So he played the first verse and into the chorus, and then we started to think about where it could go from there. So, look, I just sort of spent an hour or so, you know, knocking out another verse, and then we collaborated with the rest of the band on where it could go musically. And we tried to write for the band and tried to integrate everyone's thoughts and talents into our arrangements, and we did arrive at something of an original sound.
That brings us to the close of another episode of Recollections. Don't forget to check out our page on the RN website for photos and some videos too of Carol Lloyd and Railroad Gin back in their heyday. The Matter of Time album has been remastered recently, and you can find it and some other great Carol Lloyd material via the Rough Red website. Enjoy your listening, and Happy Digging.